This episode is brought to you by Podomatic, the easiest way for podcast fans to become podcasters. Go to podomatic.com or search Podomatic in your app store to start your own podcast for free and find your audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 356 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good.
We are back with a movie that does in fact exist. We were a bit unsure of it last week.
But it did.
5 years after the original Bird Box, they made a Spanish set sequel, or I guess I don't even know how do you describe this. It's a franchise film, because it's got none of the obviously the original cast or anything like that. But yeah, we'll get to that, because there is in fact some news to get into this week. Pretty interesting stuff. This first one is kind of a bit painful because it's something that we love, that I think is. This just isn't that fun to talk about, and we'll get into it. It's to do with Fright Fest. Obviously, they announced their lineup over the past week, which I don't really have too much to say because obviously we already knew we weren't going this year. I haven't done the deep dive into the schedule and kind of figured things out, but I'm sure there'll be plenty of stuff that we'll want to check out in the future. But prior to the announcement of the lineup, there was a little sort of post on their website a few days before, called Changes at Fright Fest 2023. And yeah, the opening sentence is, Fright Fest 2023 is going to be a little bit different from previous years. And I feel like that's underselling it because yeah, there's a lot of changes this year. So for people that have listened to our coverage, they'll kind of know, like, I don't want to get too bogged down to the details because if you haven't been, it's quite complicated to explain the entire sort of screen setup. But people will know that, like, one of our favorite parts of going to the festival is that it's mainly at the the Odeon at Leicester Square. It is the Odeon, right? Is it the Cineworld?
Yeah.
Right, the Cineworld. It does say that in this post, but for some reason I thought it always had the Odeon brand. And I guess because there's the Odeon's the one across the road, isn't it? That has all the big premieres. So yeah, you're right. The Cineworld obviously is the main hub for Fright Fest, but it has obviously a huge presence at the Prince Charles Cinema, just around the corner that we absolutely adore. And they're no longer involved, which I think is obviously that's a huge negative, and I feel like that's the lead here, and we're going to touch on a few other little small minor changes and some that are quite frustrating to me as a fan. And again, I want to preface all of that with what I just said. Like, we're such huge fans of Fright Fest. We've spent literal thousands of pounds over the years going to this festival, and we'll hopefully continue to go to it in the future. We had obviously just made prior plans that clashes with that weekend, so we knew we weren't going to go to this anyway. But this is certainly a huge disappointment. I think just the way it's happened that they never really said anything. I can't find any correspondence from Prince Charles. In my eyes, I would have always assumed they would have been a part of it unless, you know, heaven forbid the Prince Charles would have shut down. But they're still going strong. They're just not involved anymore. And there's a huge restructuring. The festival is definitely downsized. Again, not to get too bogged down into the details, but there was always two big screens in the Cineworld that would feature the main screen films, and that has now been reduced to just one, which is the sort of big super screen that we experienced last year. That's awesome. So that's going to be the only screen now, and then all of the other screens within that Cineworld will have like the lesser films. So it's a big change, and I think it's one that is disappointing, which, yeah, we can kind of get to, and then I'll kind of get our overall thoughts in a sec, but there is a few other things here. This next one, this isn't nowhere near as earth-shattering, of course, but like it's one that I find frustrating, again, from a fan perspective, which is that the sort of the lead sponsor has changed. Obviously, it was the Arrow Video Fright Fest for the longest time, and that is no longer the case. It is now the Pigeon Shrine Fright Fest, which not only sounds terrible, in my personal opinion, but I had no idea what Pigeon Shrine was.
So I did say that's a bigger question.
Yeah, well, I did what the marketing and the whole reason why they would want to sponsor a film festival is I Googled it, and I went on Pigeon Shrine's website, which is currently about three paragraphs of text on a blank website that has nothing else on it. And they has some of the most preposterous kind of sentences I've ever read. So I've kind of pulled a few here. They say, so the beginning of the website says, revolutionizing filmmaking. Welcome to Pigeon Shrine, a boutique film studio that is redefining the filmmaking landscape. We have developed a process we call synth-assisted production, our unique blend of advanced tools and innovative virtual technology that revolutionizes the way films are made. Synth-assisted production fuels efficient filmmaking. This approach allows independent films to scale new heights, putting them on par with major studio productions, which, you know, regardless of what we want or think of this, that is such an absurd sentence to put. Saying, you know, even trying to compare independent films to major studio productions. And then, yeah, lastly, they say, in the world of filmmaking, we're leading the charge towards a future where superior production quality is available to all. At Pigeon Shrine, we don't just make films. We're paving the way for the future of the industry forever. Obviously ridiculously bold claims, and regardless of what we think about this use of tech and stuff, even putting that to one side, even just giving them the benefit of the doubt, there's nothing to back this up. There's nothing on the website. If they are a relatively small company or whatever, that's fine. I don't understand.
It's a troll. Like, don't fall for it. I'm giving them
all of the benefit of the doubt here.
I'm saying it's genuinely not a thing. Like, not. Yeah. I think it's made up. I think it's going to be some plot for a movie or something.
You think this is like an ARG?
Yeah. I think this is like Cloverfield, like a Cloverfield project or something that's sponsoring Fright Fest.
God, that would make so much sense. But I think the sad reality is that this is like a bunch of companies that just have a bunch of money. And listen, like, I'm kind of jumping all over the place because I've been kind of at odds with a lot of this Fright Fest news over the last week. But, like, I get it. It's a sponsor. It doesn't matter. It's whoever bid the highest is what Fright Fest should take, because it protects the future of the festival. That's all we really care about. Having said that, while sponsorship in general and advertising sucks, when it's something that you like, I think it makes such a huge difference. And I think it makes me question a lot. Like, for example, is Arrow's presence at Fright Fest gone now entirely? Because not only were they the lead sponsor, they had the best booth by far to buy films at the festival. And they had that baked-in relationship where Arrow, as well as Shudder, which is also no longer a sponsor because they don't sponsor any of the screens anymore. You know, neither of these two massive horror companies that we love are sponsoring this festival anymore. Are they going to pick up any of these films, or has something happened? Again, I'm you know, just hypothesizing here, but like, that's very disappointing to me. And again, I'm only speaking from a fan perspective, because I'm sure there are plenty of business reasons why all this has happened, and we can kind of tie all this in together with the downsizing and the getting rid of the Prince Charles. And again, I will say, and then throw over to you, like, I can't judge the lineup. That's why we're not talking about this here, because I just haven't done the research into it. And tickets went on sale, the festival passes, they sold out. So people are still going to go to this, and I hope everyone has an awesome time. But purely for me, from a fan perspective, losing the two sponsors that I loved, and then obviously the lack of the Prince Charles, like, we spend so much money and time. It's so expensive going to London for multiple days, bank holiday weekend in August.
Hotels, the food, you know, it's not just the tickets.
No, everything. And so if I'm going all that way, I want to go to the Prince Charles because I fucking love it. Right. So, like, it would already be like, okay, now I've got a hope that weekend they'll be showing some cool stuff. And then that's already going to take away from the whole point of why I'm going to the festival. Or, sorry, why I'm going to the city in the first place. So, I think this is all very disappointing, and I hope this doesn't affect the festival going forward. And obviously, I hope everyone has a great time. But, yeah, I know there's a lot here to unpack, but you can kind of pick at this however you wish to, because there's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, my head hurts. It really does. And, like, it's really hard because you don't want to just put a negative spin on everything. But I do think that everything, you know, like I say, the films will hopefully speak for themselves, and we will see, you know, we already know what the festival is going to be in the way of films, and we have a great time with it. You know, I don't think they're getting crazy big films, but every year we've gone, we've found gems that we've had a great time with, you know, just, just 2 weeks ago, you know, I was talking about getting to rewatch Lola and having the most amazing time watching this movie that I would have never seen in a million years if I had not gone to Fright Fest. So, like, those experiences will hopefully still be there, and that's the most important thing. But everything that you've just spoken about to me is really disappointing and does, you know, it does diminish what a Fright Fest experience is for me. You know, the number one with a bullet is Prince Charles. You know, that place is special. I think as well, it just makes it feel like more of a experience that you're doing, you know, wandering down to this little old theater and going in there and, you know, just having these different experiences and kind of almost having that different mindset that you're going to have a different experience. Like, it's weird because probably now all of the films are going to be shown on a bigger, better screen because of it. But I want that smaller experience, that more intimate experience with a more intimate, smaller film. And, you know, some of the discussions that you get with the filmmaker and those little Prince Charles screens have been very special. So, you know, it's difficult either way when I actually think about the actual physical screen and the cinema that they're replacing it with, but just the cinema itself just is huge disappointment for me. You know, the sponsor, the actual, like, losing Arrow and Shudder was the thing that I kind of, you know, was really looking at. The whole Pigeon Shrine thing is a new information as to what that is, and I guess I'll put a pin in that for a second. But I think, like, you know...
Yeah, I'm half joking about that stuff, but I just found it interesting when I didn't go down that rabbit hole.
I mean, yeah, I do want to, but maybe get there if we have time, but I just, because, you know, there's so much, because I do think that, you know, the whole experience was that the Arrow booth and that experience, and then the post Fright Fest is that eventual rollout, that excitement that, like, you know, Arrow was announcing, like, we've picked this movie up, or like the Blu-ray's coming ASAP, and, you know, that was always good. You know, the fact that Shudder relationship was there, seeing these movies flow through, you know, it is the tail end of it. And ultimately, as long as these movies are still getting distribution, great. But it kind of felt like Fright Fest was an avenue for these movies to get on those platforms. And now it feels like Fright Fest is just a such a smaller scale thing. The fact that these two people are seemingly absent, you know, the drop of sponsorship and you know, everything just makes it sound and feel more scale backed. And I just truly hope that's not the case. You know, and I do find it just so crazy that the sponsor is this weird website that is alluding towards this strange AI in a world where, you know, this week, all production of everything has just ceased in the film and TV world because of this exact issue. And then a film, you know, festival.
An independent film festival as well.
Independent film festival is having that as the main sponsor. It feels incredibly cringy and really unfortunate with the timing and maybe unfortunate with what this is. And because who the hell knows? It feels like a joke. Like, it really does. Like, the timing of this and what this is. And I don't want to point too many fingers and be too damning, because it is just A, just a sponsor, like you say, and B, we don't really know the specifics. But when you were reading that, it blew my mind. I was like, this is, this is rough. Like, I'm like, my gut visceral reaction when you're reading that was like, it makes me want to be less associated with Fright Fest, hearing that and having that as a sponsor. You know, I got to be honest, like, that's truly, you know, what I was thinking. Whereas when you see Arrow and it's like Arrow are trying to keep physical media alive and they're trying to restore horror on, you know, they're trying to get the best versions of horror out there. They're trying to keep physical media going. I'm like, that is a brand that I want to champion and support. And when you read me a couple of paragraphs of what this is, I'm like, oh no, this is my worst nightmare. And it should be anyone's worst nightmare that truly love film and also love independent film. You know, I think that statement of being like, independent movies can you know, stand alongside blah blah blah, load of bollocks. I'm like, no, exactly what we've just said, you know, what I've just been talking about, Lola, is just this incredible independent movie that I don't want it to be on this big scale budget. Having this person that just put their life into this project for years and created this really special bit of art is what independent movies are. You know, this week we've just seen Mission Impossible at the cinema. Do I love Mission Impossible or Lola more? I don't know. I love them both for very different reasons, and I want both to exist at the end of the spectrum.
I'll answer that question later, don't worry.
Yeah, but
I know what you're saying, though.
It's outrageous because, you know, there's apples and oranges, and they're two ends of the spectrum, and I want both to exist. And so, yeah, like, everything hurts. My brain truly hurts from all of these things.
I think at best that sponsorship is tone deaf.
Yeah.
But at its worst, it really is everything you've just said and more. Yeah. Where it is so emblematic of a huge issue right now that is, timing is everything and optics is everything. And for this festival that stands for so much so well, let alone the fact that, let's not forget, this is a genre film festival. Mm. And all of their big lead sponsors were dedicated towards genre films. And there isn't anything on this website that has anything to do with that.
Yeah.
You know, this really is something completely in another realm. And it's like, it's so barely linked to even film. I think, like I say, what their end goal and what they want the future of films to be is so radically different to what I think most people that go to Fright Fest for. The other side of it as well is like, let's not pretend that there isn't a huge amount of advertising at Fright Fest. And again, I get it, and I can look at it from a business perspective, and understand why that happens. But as a fan, I can also talk shit about it. Like, I hate the amount of ads we have to sit through at the normal cinema, like what we did at the weekend. Mm. Let alone when I'm paying a premium and we still have to sit through ads. But when I'm seeing ads for all of the latest Shudder and Arrow releases, it really doesn't bother me. But if I'm sitting there and all they've got to show at this point in August is maybe like a 6 minute someone talking to the camera and just saying all these stupid statements, like, I really want to know what the advertising for this brand is going to look like come August.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be fascinating.
So that's something that I would love for people to let us know what that's like before all of the films. But yeah, like I say, I completely echo everything you've said. And it's one of those cases that we hate where we have to give our opinion. And our opinion is unfortunately negative on something that we love. That's kind of where I want to end this, is that this is clearly from a place of love. Everyone who knows us and has listened for years knows how much we love Fright Fest, and it will forever be linked with this podcast, you know, from the moment we got to see Rob Zombie's 31 back in 2016. And we've been huge champions of the festival for many, many years, and we still will. And I really hope that we get to go again in the future. It was, you know, regardless of this, we'd already made the decision, which I'm glad, you know, we didn't have to make the decision off the back of this.
It would have been interesting, you know, because that is the thing. Like, we've looked at it with a lens that we knew we couldn't go regardless.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I really would be fascinated to know what our decision was, you know. And ultimately, we would have sat down and analyzed the films more. You know, that would have been the answer.
Yeah, and like, I think I would have liked to have known. Because right now there's a lot of unknowns. There's the big changes, the lack of Prince Charles, the change of this dubious sponsor, all of this stuff. And I think if we'd have gone and had like a genuine, that would have made this a lot easier to decide for us. Like, we could have said, like, they've made these changes, they've downscaled, they've done this, they've done that, and we don't think it's worth the value anymore. Whereas, unfortunately, we're just not going to be able to make that decision, or at least we can't, you know, make that decision because we're not going. So, yeah, it is unfortunate, but like I say, it's sold out. There are some cool looking films there. You know, there are some cool guests and stuff. So I really hope everyone that does go has a great time. And I really hope these minor problems aren't major problems. Because the last thing I'd want to see is this festival go away. I'd be so sad. It'd be like one of the worst things we could possibly report on this podcast.
Sure.
You know, and that is a reality. Like, it's tough for everyone to continue to do these things, you know. Like, every festival, like big music festivals, have come and gone and stuff. And so for this genre specific, we're so lucky that we have such a good horror film festival in this country, and I'd be gutted if it went away. I really would.
I definitely echo that.
But yeah, moving on, there's a couple of quick hits now. This one's quite nice, but again, we'll have more to say in a couple of months. The nominations for the Emmys got announced in the past week, and I, for one, am very curious to see how our beloved The Last of Us is going to get on. Obviously, I like to see this. It's not hugely important to us. I'm always like, I like the awards when there's stuff I'm invested in, and clearly I am with this show. But yeah, the nominations, it's been a huge success. It's the second most nominated show with 24 total nominations across everything. Only second to Succession with 27. And also The White Lotus was third with 23, which are all HBO shows as the top three, which just shows they're unbelievable. Dominance. It's also nominated for the big three, so it's nominated for Outstanding Drama Series, as well as Outstanding Lead Actor for Pedro and Lead Actress for Bella. So it's not just technical stuff, even though I'm sure that's where it's going to really clean up on the kind of visual effects, hair and makeup and costume and all that stuff that is clearly so phenomenal. But yeah, like I say, it's in mid-September, so we'll talk about it then. I've been pretty bold with my predictions in The Last of Us in the past, and they've always come true. What I will say with this is I'm not confident. In fact, on the opposite, I do not think it stands a chance of winning Outstanding Drama Series this year, because I think you've got two massive heavy hitters in their final season, or, you know, this was their final seasons in Better Call Saul and Succession, two massively beloved shows. I think in general, awards are given out more for final seasons of TV, and that's something that I actually agree with. I think it's cool to kind of give shows their flowers when they're done, because I think it's the hardest thing to do to end a show well. And so when these two shows, I've not watched either, so I can't comment, but I know they're very, very well received. So I think it's between them. So I think it is like the third outside favorite. I think Pedro is probably the best shout, but again, I still think there's more established actors that have played those characters for longer, and it's their last hurrah, whereas they clearly know this is just the beginning for The Last of Us. But yeah, very, very happy for it, and obviously extremely deserved. Like, The Last of Us is such a huge hit now. It's become a household name, which is mind-blowing to us. But yeah, do you have anything to add about The Last of Us's great success?
No.
That's fine. Really, I know you're not an award guy like me.
No, I think it's just, I get frustrated by it all. The thing I'm most excited about is that 4K has just dropped for The Last of Us.
Yes.
So that's more exciting for me than the noms, to actually have that 4K and, you know, some extra features and that sort of thing. So I'm more looking forward to a rewatch than anything else.
Yeah, enjoy that, because that's probably all we're going to get for the next couple of years.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to dive in to the 4K for sure, because I am like, do you know what? Like, I got to savor this, like, because it's gonna be a while.
Yeah, I only played
big production TV show is it's a ways out, guys.
I only played both games back in December, and I already feel like I need to just play them again, because like I say, we're not getting a TV show, we're certainly not getting a game anytime soon, so we're just not getting anything, unfortunately, for a very long time. But oh well, just enjoy what we have. And then, yeah, lastly, just a couple of trailers. I kind of ended up just watching like about 10 trailers in the past week of just random shit online, to try and get a sense of what's coming. And there was a couple that I wanted to put in here just because I found them quite interesting for different reasons. This first one's a new horror movie called Don't Look Away, which is out in September. And this was such a strange one because it's so clearly aping It Follows. For people that haven't seen this, it's like It Follows, but with mannequins. You know, so it's these mannequins that are staring at you, and the second you look away, like a sort of weeping angel type mechanic.
Sounds like Weeping Angels, mate.
Yeah, and apparently it is based on some video game, and it's a mechanic that has been used greatly, especially in the Resident Evil games recently, because I love it. But I thought the trailer was wacky and fun, and I don't think that's what they were going for. I think they think this is like an elevated, serious It Follows type film, but I thought it looked kind of stupid and fun for that reason. So yeah, I'm interested in this, but it's probably going to be quite cringy in a fun way. Did you see this trailer?
No, I didn't. It sounds like hilarious, just the synopsis. And synopsis alone, I'm like, you know what? Like, that sounds goofy enough, where I'm like, that's funny.
It's played so straight, and like the font and the kind of tagline and everything is so clearly trying to be It Follows, which I think was so not remotely goofy or funny any of it. I didn't think, and so
just
like I think
the image
just,
that I see of like the mannequin looks hilarious. Like the mannequin itself, you know, doesn't look like it's being serious.
But it really is, though. Like, I don't, again, maybe I'm wrong and I'm just playing into their hands, but I don't think they're going for like fun and silly. I think they're going for like serious, but who knows? That's obviously just a tonal thing. If it's fun, it's fun. But the next movie definitely looks fun, which is absurd, called The Retirement Plan, which is apparently out in August. And yeah, Nick Cage just doesn't miss right now. He has found his niche, and you're either gonna love it or hate it, because it is just what he does now, and I love it. And I think this movie looks ridiculous. You know, it's another one of these Nick Cage kind of, is he playing himself, who knows, this kind of guy on a beach, you know, somewhat like a, not John Wick, I guess, more like a Taken, I guess, type film. Or like a,
oh, I don't know if there's a plot. I don't think there's a plot. I think you've gone too far into it already. Yeah. Like people just follow Nick Cage around these days.
Yeah. And just see what he's up to.
And occasionally asks him, like, if you could make a movie about something, what would you do? And then he just starts like riffing with the other people, and they film it, and it happens. You know, sometimes he's with Pedro Pascal, and sometimes he's not. You know, and who knows? Like, you know, sometimes he puts in, you know, vampire teeth and dicks around for a couple of hours. Like, you just don't know.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, like, his acting style is just like jazz. Like, you just don't know where it's going to go at any point. And yeah, I love it for that reason. Like, it's more of like an action comedy, this one, but it's, you know, got some sort of bloody violence in it. But yeah, it looks fun. Like,
to be like honest, if 70s Stephen King played jazz, that's what Nick Cage does now.
Yeah, like, I have no idea if we're going to cover this or whatever, but I just wanted to talk about it because Nick Cage is so much fun.
No, we're absolutely not covering it because it's not a horror movie to slay it, but I can tell you that now.
Just wait until I'm going to float as an idea to cover for next week. We'll get to that at the end. But yeah, like, I watched, it's funny because I probably, like I said, I watched about 10 trailers, and these were the two that I thought were noteworthy.
Yeah, welcome to me at this part. Why do you think I do this once a year, mate?
Yeah, I know.
I can't do this on a weekly, like, try to find horror movies. Like,
no, it's so funny because I never do this either, but there were so many that were, like, announced that were all coming sort of this summer. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to invest some time. And my God, were so many of them just so forgettable and dull. But yeah.
And I think that's why, like, you know, something like Fright Fest, that's why we love it so much, because at least we know there's a level of curation to it. And we might not always be like akin to the four guys' tastes or whatever, but at least we know it's gone through, like, something, you know, some sort of vetting. Whereas, you know, when you're out there in the Wild West trying to find horror movies, it can be a weird place.
Well, I also think as well, like, you're guaranteed to see at least probably 10 that you don't really know much about. So just playing the odds, you're gonna get a couple that you love. Like, you know, like, out of these 10 trailers I watched, and probably none of them are that good, I'm sure I'd end up enjoying a couple, and they probably wouldn't be the ones I'd assume based upon the trailers. But yeah, all in good fun. But yeah, should we talk about this week's film?
Oh shit, yeah, I suppose we should.
Let's talk about Bird Box Barcelona. So yeah, this is such a strange project that this exists. We talked about this in the news, I can't remember when, I think it was this year. But just out of nowhere, it was like Netflix are finally doing, like, they do this so often with their big films where they say they're going to do sequels straight away and they kind of never do. Like, that Will Smith movie, was it called Bright or something? That was
that was like their crazy big budget one.
They've had so many of these. And granted, they do pump out a lot of sequels to stuff, because I think like Extraction just got a sequel and some other stuff that I've not really seen. But like, it's weird the amount of ones you would think. Like, I would have assumed Bird Box, based upon, you know, it was popular and was well received, and I think that it was easy to franchise it. So I'm like, I really thought we would have got Bird Box 2 almost immediately, and we just didn't. But yeah, now we get a franchise movie that's kind of set in that world, but we don't have any idea in terms of, like, I'm glad because obviously it's been 5 years since we saw Bird Box. Seen that movie once and I thought it was fine at the time. But I can't remember almost anything about it. You know, we've literally covered hundreds of films for the podcast since then. And I wasn't going to start reading synopsises of it. I really didn't care. So I went into this one pretty blind, pun intended, where, let's say, I'd not seen a trailer, I'd not read a synopsis, I just knew there was another Bird Box, I assumed it was foreign language, and then I hit play. So yeah, that was my kind of introduction to this film, and I'm assuming you were the same, because that's typically your introduction.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to the point that, because what was the Quiet Place ripoff that Netflix did?
Yeah, it was called like The Silence or something like that.
I'm not gonna lie, got that confused with Bird Box.
Yeah.
So I started watching this and I was so confused initially because haven't seen Bird Box for years. Remember liking it, but couldn't. I just remember that they weren't allowed to see for some reason.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember exactly what that reason was.
Not same.
And so. You know, reestablishing this world and basically, you know, the world, the BBCU, as it's now called, is basically that there is this entity that we don't really know whether it was, I don't think we still know truly what it is, whether it's a life form or an entity or what it is, but basically going to call it an entity, it appears on Earth, day zero, whatever you want to call it, outbreak day. And as soon as you see it, your eyes kind of glaze over and you immediately, or 99% of people immediately commit suicide in whatever manner they can end their life the quickest after seeing this entity. So the kind of initial kind of setup of Bird Box and Bird Box Barcelona is really kind of seeing those rules in action and seeing these people just kind of, you know, on outbreak day that, you know, you're literally running around in chaos and people in cars are crashing into each other. People are jumping out of buildings, you know, people are getting more creative on how to kill themselves as well. And it's just, it's carnage basically. And yeah, in, you know, Bird Box Barcelona, we kind of meet our kind of, we meet multiple kind of groups of characters, I guess, throughout the movie. But our lead is kind of Sebastian, and he mainly kind of meets up with a lady called Claire, I think. And then is it Sophia? Little girl, I think. And basically these are three survivors. It's been about 9 months after the outbreak.
Yeah.
And we're now kind of, they've established that, because this was the thing that I couldn't remember the rules from the first movie, and they're following the rules in this movie. So the entity can't seem to go inside or it has to be in daylight. I couldn't quite remember the specifics. Could you?
No, I would assume it's daylight.
Yeah, but or just outsideness, because I think you can still be around at night. Like, I'm not sure, but basically if you're inside, you're relatively safe from the entity unless sunlight comes in. So I think it is like daylight. You know, natural light is what kind of causes you to see this entity. And so our characters, are mostly hidden inside. And if they ever go outside, they cover their eyes so they don't see this entity. And they can get around and kind of, you know, navigate and stay alive. And the entity has kind of figured this out. And so when I said 99% of people commit suicide, there is the 1% that kind of have formed this cult, this kind of, you know,
cult, you say?
Cult,
I'm interested.
Go on. that basically are trying to make everyone see the lights, and they are actively pulling people out of their their safe havens inside and forcing their eyes open to see this entity. To what end? I'm not really sure. That they're just seemingly brainwashed by this entity, so they're just that they are basically the conduits. That, you know, these, you know, lifeless zombies almost, where they're just pulling these people out. And yeah, we join kind of Sebastian. You know, I think, I guess, do we throw up any sort of spoiler warning when we go into Sebastian, or
yeah,
what,
it's really? So difficult, isn't it? Because I don't know what's been shown, obviously.
No,
and I do.
I'm just gonna go for it a bit, like mild spoiler warning, because I think it's like, you know what, maybe like first 20 minutes, and then we get this reveal.
Yeah, it is like the best part of the film, though.
All right. Well, we don't have to. Like, we can go on from there, maybe.
Yeah, we should. Cause I feel like we've already spoken way too much about the plot anyway, so let's leave it for now.
I feel like I, you know, spoke about the world, and like, I think like the world and the idea of Bird Box is interesting. Like, and I think when we spoke about the first movie, you know, going back 5 years ago in my head now, like, I think we said the similar things to what I'm going to say now, where it's like, I like the premise and the idea, but I'm not so sure about the execution. And I'm the same with this, where this felt the same, where I was kind of, I don't think this movie does a good job of reintroducing you to this world 5 years beyond. You know, I don't think the onus should be on me to rewatch Bird Box or do a recap. I think they should do it in a way that doesn't take up a lot of the film, but explain things a bit better. You know, in particular about the kind of hiding and that sort of thing, and what's safe and what's not. Because unless I'm an idiot or just missed it, like I found myself confused with that lore watching this movie throughout, where I just gave up caring whether the characters were safe or not. And I kind of just feel like once you kind of get the craziness of day zero and the kind of outbreak day and everyone going nuts, and then you've just got a group of survivors, I just think this story then falls flat, where I'm like, I just don't really care about the world or the survival anymore. You know, I think, you know, when we talk about Quiet Place and these creatures are still knocking off people, I think there's a lot of stories and tension that can be drawn out of this. But with this, it's just like, it's just a lot of people walking around with their eyes shut, and I just don't, you know, I'm sure people would say that about Quiet Place, they're just walking around quietly, but I just don't know. Is it just in the execution, or is it just this idea just falls flat once you've got all the carnage out of the way? But I ultimately enjoyed the flashbacks and kind of the more action-y set pieces. But then when we actually got into the cults and what this was about and all of that, like, I wasn't super into it. By the end of it, this kind of, as always with these, you know, these post-apocalyptic outbreak-y type things, this kind of promise of a safe haven, I never truly believe in it. It just doesn't exist. All I think is, well, next season it's going to go to shit, or next movie it's going to go to shit. Like, there's no such thing as a safe haven in these awful post-apocalyptic worlds. So when these characters are spending the whole movie trying to get somewhere, I just don't. I'm a bit over it, and I kind of, I'm almost like, just. Chill where you were. Like, you know, you were as safe where you were at the start of this movie, really. Yeah, there's more people around you and you've got, you know, a bit more comfort, but it's all going to go to shit anyway. And that's, I don't know. Like I said, I ended up feeling pretty down on this one. It didn't live up to what I kind of hoped it would be. And then once I'd finished seeing it, I was like, I don't really know what I hoped it would be, because this is probably what it should be, and I just didn't really want it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I think, like, your individual points I probably agree with quite a bit, but I do have a different feeling on the film overall, because I did quite like this. I thought, like, the first 20 minutes was awesome, truly. Which again, we will get into, but like, I think again, I completely agree with what you said in terms of the lore is so confusing, because it's a really ambiguous rule set. What actually is it, and then what, how it affects people differently. But that's just kind of what this is, and it's never going to be explained to you, so you kind of have to go with it. So it's like, again, this is why I say, like, I agree and disagree, because I agree with that point, but I do disagree in terms of it not putting you back in the world after 5 years, because I really like the intro. Like, it's very simple. It's just him and his daughter walk in, you know, they establish the blindfold stuff, they get attacked and all that stuff. Like, to me, I was kind of in it straight away. Like, when he, you know, tracks down those first people and goes to the bus shelter, that's like the first sort of location he goes to. Like, it reminded me straight away, like, oh yeah, it's you can't look thing. And again, like, I wasn't thinking too much about the specifics at this point of like, wait, what is it? Is it daylight? Can it see you at night? Which again, I think are all valid questions. I was just back in there and I was like, oh yeah, I remember Bird Box. Like, this is a different feeling. And I do think that the original movie was 100% a victim of when it got released.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, no question about it. We've seen that time and time again with films and definitely certain video games as well, where, like, if they come out to something so similar, it's just those comparisons. And when it's clearly the inferior product, like, no one's going to argue, I don't think, or certainly they shouldn't, that Bird Box is even close to the level of A Quiet Place. But I think if we'd have seen that, like, last year, I think we'd have really liked it, and we'd have liked it more. But again, that's not too relevant here, because I think this is purely just, you know, hypothesizing. So I think this movie coming out, where I'm like, oh yeah, it's reestablished that I liked Bird Box and we haven't seen anything like this in a while, I was having a lot of fun. I think the first 20 minutes just goes. I think, again, plot, which we'll get into, was super left field and I didn't see coming. I think there's like an amazing twist early on where I was so confused,
like, at that point.
I was like, what is going on? Because it's, again, it's so rare when you watch a movie that does something where I'm like, okay, this isn't some weird surrealist movie like what we saw a few weeks ago where I feel like they aren't going to explain it. I'm like, no, they're going to explain these actions. And right now, if you said to me what's happening, I wouldn't be able to explain it. So I loved that. And it is explained as well. So, like, I thought it was great. So I think it starts off really strong for me, where I was like, oh my God, this is actually awesome. But then it does slow down. I think when he gets to this other group, and then it does become exactly what you said of just people treaching around with blindfolds. You're not really attached to anyone in the group. Pretty generic kind of stuff that they're doing, where it's like, oh, here's some raiders or whatever, and now there's the spooky monster, you know, is starting to anti-grav the place around them, so it must be nearby. Like, it really starts to feel generic in the middle of the film, which is a shame, because I think it was so anything but that. Like, I can't understate, I think, how different the start of this movie felt to the middle part, because it really just felt like it was swerving you, and it was really exciting and interesting and pretty gory at the start as well, like some good horror in there, and then it just kind of goes pretty tame, and a lot of the kills end up being a lot off screen in the middle of the film as well. Like, it really slows down. And like, then you get the flashbacks, which I think are good, but there's too many of them. They're too slow. And I also feel like they, in the present, they've already told me everything I needed to know with Sebastian, which I thought was awesome. And so you see it play out, and it's fine, and it gets you to where you need to go. But I would have rather have just assumed that, because everything that I assumed was what was shown, and it didn't add anything to it. It just slowed it down. Where I was like, yeah, I kind of get Sebastian and his daughter's relationship at this point, and I get why he's motivated to do what he's doing. But so then to slowly, painfully see it play out, I was like, yeah, it played out the way I thought it would. But, like, I didn't need any of that. So then it slowed in the middle, which was unfortunate. And then, yeah, I think the ending, again, is nowhere near as good. Like, I think the ending kind of, it becomes a lot more of a generic tale, specifically with Sebastian, who I think in general is a really awesome character, but he becomes so much more of a typical protagonist in the finale. I think what made him so interesting in the first act and the second act is thrown away. For a kind of, I get it, it's like a redemption arc, but I don't think it's earned. And by the end of it, he could just be any other, you know, civilian who's trying to save the kid and get them to their destination. And you hit the nail on the head as well. Like, that as a trope sucks so bad. Like, it's so boring. And the second it is, like, that's going to be the finale of our movie, of, especially when it's like, we need to get this little girl to this safe location. It's just like, come on, man. We've done this so much now. But the safe location thing, I'm totally with you, of like, it feels like such a cheat code in these films, where I'd much rather they just existed and were just like, yep, this sucks, we need to just make the most of it, rather than like, oh, it's all going to be perfect and we're all going to live, you know, fairy tale lives. And it does have somewhat of a fairy tale ending as well, especially with the little girl. Like, it's kind of preposterous how much of an upbeat ending it is. And the ending scenes after that feel so bolted on. They felt like they were from a completely different film. Where I was like, wait, what's going on now with this? And then the movie just kind of ended. And I was like, wow, that was so unsatisfying. So, like, I really went on a journey with this film because I loved the way it started so, so much. I found the middle to just be a bit too long. It wasn't bad. It was just a bit too, like, dragged out. And it needed to have more reinventions. Like it did so much in the first act that I didn't see come in. It then followed a very familiar blueprint in the middle part and then just had such an unsatisfying conclusion to me. And for such a long movie, you really have, and it's, I guess it's not super long because it's just under 2 hours, but it really felt longer than that to me.
It felt long because, you know, once we had that set up, it was just so long then getting to the finale, really.
Yeah, completely, you know, agree. There's like a middle 50 minutes, isn't there?
It is those flashbacks. Yeah, like, once you know what's going on, the flashbacks are pretty unnecessary.
Yeah,
and that's the problem, you know, that then there's just far too much. I think as well, like, you know, with, like, talking shit about it being like a basic post-apocalyptic plot, I do think it's worth mentioning that, like, you know, this podcast, we've spoken about The Last of Us already, and that is literally like, get the young girl who might be the cure to people that can extract it. And it's like, you know, that is almost the same as what we're describing here in terms of a simplistic post-apocalyptic idea, but it is just all about the execution and the characters. And, you know, with this, it was just like, these are almost nameless characters, you know, and it's not the language barrier and it's not anything like that. It's just that they're a bit pointless. And like Sebastian, again, like this, you know, are you meant to like him? Are you meant to root for him? Like, you know, the other characters have no backstory. Like the little girl is just like, I've lost my mum. And the other woman is just like there. Do you know what I mean? Like she just happens to be the one that sticks around. I think most of
the characters are like that, are just there. Like the two other guys, not the old guy who's in the relationship, but the two other younger guys, they're just there.
there's literally no story for them, which is fine. Like, you know, it is just, you know, but when you have no relationship with the character, it just carries way less weight. And then, you know, I'm not rooting for Claire and Sophia to get to the end. I'm not fussed, and I think that's why it dropped down, you know, a lot once we get to those final acts. Because I do think, you know, as you say, the first 20 minutes is good. Like I certainly weren't as high on it as you, but it does throw you back in the world in an interesting enough way. And certainly when the whole bus scene starts to happen, I was like you, where I'm like, I'm so confused. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Why is this happening? But I knew that, it was going to explain it to me, and it did. And I found that kind of satisfying. And when we got later on into the movie, it just, that disappears, where this conflict for the character and this, you know, the kind of, you know, what this entity does to control your mind and all of that just kind of eliminates. And it's just, you know, we just kind of get this point where it's like, just not going to bother anymore. Like, I'm good. And I'm like, what, why? Like, you know, that's probably more important than getting to safety right now. Like, how did this happen? Like, you know, I would be focusing on that if I were these people.
Yeah, that should almost be like the link to cure in this thing. Because I do think there are interesting stuff here. Like, they kind of hint at it towards the end of, like, why this entity does different things to different people, you know, based upon their background and their emotions and stuff. And I think that there is so much good shit here. And I think that's what's disappointing, because I think what Sebastian is as a lead character at the start is fascinating for this world. Again, like, he is the almost complete opposite of what you'd expect in this type of film. Because he is such a malevolent force. Yeah, like, he, I just, I love that. And I think that he, it is just a shame because by the end of it, he is just generic hero protagonist. But I think when he's doing what he's doing at the start, I'm like, oh, this is, like, I'm like, why are we aligned with this guy? Like, it feels kind of gross and kind of wrong, which I loved. Where I was like, man, I can't believe this is what our lead character is doing. And yeah, everything up until that bus stuff was so good. And it is really a shame because, yeah, it loses steam. And I think it's a shame because, I still didn't hate this. And I think this is one of those conversations that's going to sound super negative. And it's funny because juxtaposition to last week's film about, like, Insidious, I loved this, like, not, I didn't love this film. I thought this was so much better than Insidious last week. Like, I had such better time watching this, but I think the conversation has clearly been much more negative with this film. And that's just the way it goes sometimes. Because I think this had, we kind of both said Insidious had promise, really, and just fell off. And I think this is similar, but just for completely different reasons. Because I think, like, that opening was so strong, and I really thought, like, oh, they're going to nail this. And I do want to take a step back as well and talk about, like, just the actual premise of all of this in terms of setting a foreign language film as a franchise installment, which we talked about when this was announced. But, like, I fucking love this so much. Right, like I said before, like, the room for, again, drink every time we mention The Last of Us, but, like, in A Quiet Place and stuff, where it's, like, well, it's so centered around one place always, and it's almost always the United States. And so I like the idea of pulling it back, and we've said before, like, showing that it's a worldwide thing that's affecting people in different ways, and maybe there's different variants as well, and have it in different time periods. Like, God, there's so much potential for this. The idea of The Last of Us, you know, in Africa or something would be fascinating to me. It would be so cool.
I think it's, you know, for me it was the end of 20 weeks later.
Yeah, you said that, yeah.
Back in the day where I was just like, you know, I want to see what happened to Paris.
Mm.
You know, did our characters from 28 weeks later cause the downfall of Europe? You know, and like, I found that really fascinating, and we just never got to see it. And, like, yeah, I love the idea of this global pandemic being, being this multi-movie thing where we get to see, you know, these character stories in Spain, some in America, some in England, Africa, wherever. And, like, that is a really cool idea. And I do tip my hat to Netflix for doing it with this. I was wondering as well, did you watch this dubbed or
no,
subtitled?
No, I did subtitle because I prefer that anyway, but I also had a feeling that this would have some English speaking in it, especially because it's Bird Box, and it ended up having, obviously, an English character. So there was, like, some English, there was a German character as well, and I didn't find the subtitles to be a problem at all.
Yeah, I watched it dubbed.
Mm.
Mainly because it was just the standard. Like, was yours automatically subtitled or?
Mine's defaulted to that.
Oh, that's weird. Cause yeah, mine defaulted to dub. So I don't know whether that's just what I've done had in the past.
It might be. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just kind of ended up starting it and like probably like 10 minutes in, I was like, hang on a second. Like, I thought this was going to be a foreign movie. And then I like looked at their faces a bit more closely and was like, oh, hang on. And like, it is funny how easily you can switch off. Like, I think the dub was fine. Like, it was a good version. I always think like back in the day when you had like these dubbed things and you'd see them and they looked really awful.
Mm.
Whereas yeah, like, I thought this was decent enough. Like, it was very watchable that way.
It's massively improved over the years, I think. Because like I say, it used to be unwatchable, and I ended up watching Squid Game across both. So, like, some episodes were subbed and some were dubbed for me, and both were equally fine. But yeah, I'm glad I watched this because I thought like the performances and that were great, especially our lead in Sebastian. I thought he was awesome, and yeah, it just, I don't know, it felt like It felt like they earned that. It felt different. This didn't just feel like America or somewhere else. It felt like a different time and a place. And so I think I give it massive props for that. It's like, I want to see more of this. Mm. Whilst this isn't an amazing film, I think it started amazing, which was what was so disappointing. It ended up being like, okay. Again, I still didn't hate it. I thought by the end of it, I was like, that was fun. Even though, like I say, it does have way too much fat in the middle that could have been trimmed, and I think it unfortunately just goes down such an obvious route. Like, I don't think a lot of people probably won't have as much of an issue with the finale, but I was, for a movie that was going so far out of the box early on, and that's why I loved it, it ends up becoming so routine by the numbers, where if I'd have paused it with 15, 20 minutes to go, I could have told you perfectly what was going to happen and who was going to die and who was going to survive and how, and who would have the hero's death, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it played out identically to that. Let alone when they get to like the camp, I definitely wouldn't have predicted that because it was preposterous, but like the actual, finale of the characters was so painfully aware who was going to live and die in that group. Cause like I said, it's like, well, yeah, who doesn't have a character in this group? That was a shame, but I still see value in this. Like, I'm glad I watched it, and it's unfortunate that it just continues a trend of like, man, it's got some great stuff, but it just gets bogged down. And I feel like that's been such a theme this year in particular, where, yeah, there's been some just like absolute shitters, but in general, these have been the types of films that have disappointed me. When I see potential and I see stuff in them that I think, oh, this was, you know, even like Knock at the Cabin was super similar, where it's like, it started off so good, and then it kind of dragged in the middle, and then it had a really shit ending. And like, I feel like that's been the case of like, man, movies are becoming like everything's a Stephen King story. They just don't know how to end anymore.
You got to stick the landing. You know, we've spoken about it so many times when you watch, when you watch a movie and it might be an average movie and then it has a really good ending, and you just walk away with such, you know, a higher sense of, you know, this was enjoyable. And it is so much harder to get behind a movie. You know, we had it, we've had it so many times over the years where we're like, oh man, Dr. Sleep, you know, it was like, God, this was so good. It was so close to perfection, but the ending just stunk so badly that like, it makes us so angry. And then like, you watch something like St. Maud and you're like, man, that ending stuck with me, and the rest of the movie is elevated because of the end. And you know, it is very important.
Yeah.
And I think, I do think with this one, I'm probably not like as low on it as like the initial talk is. I do like the first 20 minutes and overall, like, I think if they were to say they were doing another Bird Box movie, I'd be like, okay, like I'm not sick and tired of this franchise yet. And I do wonder, like, for me, I'm like, have they made the best Bird Box movie they could yet? Or do I still like the premise and the idea of it more than the execution? And I think that's probably where I'm at. And like, I think, you know, like the fact that we've not even spoken about it hardly, but this whole like cult thing and these people wandering around and like drawing eyes on people's foreheads and then like prizing their eyeballs open, it just is very confusing to me what this is. And like, I almost feel like they need to be more like, not zombie like, but more like clearly in a daze. You know, their eyes should be proper glazed over, and they really should just be these conduits that are just dragging people out. And because I think like the whole kind of cult angle where they are more aware just is confusing, you know, and especially when they then start like taunting people as well. And it's like, I don't really feel like that's the entity's end game is to be like a cat with a toy. It just wants people to die. You know, no part of this is like a game for it, a backwards and forwards. So yeah, it is strange. And I do I find as well that these people were very ill equipped for like 9 months of living with this. Like, the amount of people that just walked into a room and was surprised that there was a window, you know, and I'm like, mate, you've been alive for 9 months. Like, how? You know, like, how are you getting caught out that easily? Like, you know, once the rules are established, you should be able to stay the fuck out of where this entity is.
Yeah, I feel like
unless you're getting dragged out. But they just got tricked so easily at times. Like, you know, if you're getting dragged out and getting your eyeballs prized open, that's one thing. But if you just get walk into a room and you're surprised because it's bright, I'm like, you really shouldn't have lasted that long.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there is a couple of things I want to add as kind of positives, but it is going to need a spoiler warning. So we'll throw that up now. And again, this isn't like ending stuff, but it is just, it's more to do with what the entity does to people, which isn't just kill themselves. Because yeah, I really like that there is more hair. And I think this is, to me, is what made this probably a more enjoyable than the film than the other Bird Box. Cause I don't remember anything like that, where it was just the kind of like, you see it and it's game over. Whereas I think the fact that, like, for example, obviously Sebastian being our lead, the fact that he has seen the entity and it has a completely different effect on him, and especially what that effect is, oh God, I thought it, again, it was so cool. Like, I love that he's lost his daughter and his wife or his, you know, his partner or whatever. And it has just completely deluded him, where it's given him what he wants. It's given him his happy ending. And through that, it's kind of this, he's almost like the step between the cult, which I think works.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to free people because his daughter's telling him to, this fake vision of his daughter, his dead daughter. And through that, it's like every time someone kills themselves, it's almost like their soul gets bolted out of their body and shoots up into the sky.
Yeah, that was really interesting. It just didn't go anywhere, did it? But like the initial setup was so interesting.
I thought that was so cool because like that's his whole reason for like driving this bus out, which again, I thought the opening was so sick. So I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like truly, I think it's cool that everyone has a different thing sometimes, and I wanted to see more of that. And I think that the cult's disappointing because it doesn't seem like they've got it as cool as that. And I think with the cult, like, especially so that
they haven't got it as cool as that. I love that.
Yeah, because like that was, to me watching it, I was like, this is genuinely awesome that like I can totally see why now. Again, talking about the why would Sebastian do what he done in that opening, which is so mental. And then you're like, oh yeah, it's a vision. Like, again, I thought it was just so clever where I was like, because when he leaves his daughter for like ages, you know, and he's like, oh, I'll call when it's safe, and then he just goes lives with these people for a night, I'm like, what is he doing? And then so yeah, getting those, I love when again, the movie doesn't do it often and it only does it in the start really, but when you're asking these questions and you get such good answers to them.
Yeah,
and that's why it would be so sick if it just continued that, which it doesn't. But I thought that, yeah, again, visually that was so cool. And like, we meet a character who kind of blinded himself early on because he was going to get forced to see the entity. And what I would have liked would have been like a blind cult that has that horrifically scarred face,
yeah,
that is going around forcibly watching people, making people open their eyes. Because again, the visualization of seeing someone kicking and screaming with their eyes closed, dragged out into the street, full on Clockwork Orange, like peeling back your eyelids until your eyes are open just a very small amount, and then it's game over. That again is great. Like, that is so much cooler than just people stumbling around in the darkness and, oh, there's an open window and now I'm dead. Like, I think what makes it so cool, and we needed more of that energy because again, there's parts of this that I think are super strong, like those moments. And again, like the cult, they end up just being seers like Sebastian, but they don't have like a reason other than just being weirdos. Cause I think Sebastian is an emotionally vulnerable human being. And so that's why the entity has used him like that, where it's like, oh yeah, I could just make him kill himself, but I can see like the vulnerability in him. And I think that's why it's probably not earned the redemption. Cause at a certain point, he just kind of figures it out. And again, I don't have an answer to that question. I would have rather he just stayed a villain, but I also get that that's kind of crazy. And I think that's why, again, I love the intro, because I was like, oh, we're being aligned with a piece of shit. Like, he's killing people and he's deluded, and we're following a guy who's been completely corrupted by the entity. And I get it, it's going to have a redemption arc, it needs it, but it's just not what I would want from the character.
Yeah, I think with the cult, like that's what I was getting at. Like not necessarily being like I say, zombified, but having like if they were blinded or something like that, so they visually looked more exciting, and they had more of a reason why they're not like Sebastian or killed themselves. I think that would have been really interesting. But yeah, I think as well, like, you know, I don't want to drag down the conversation on the movie, but I think it is like, you know, you've spoken so much about the first 20 minutes, and I think it really does show that, like, this is an hour and 50 minute movie.
Yeah.
And it's like the first 20 minutes are good, and I don't think there's anything good after that. Like the odd thing. And I think, like, the whole Sebastian arc, I found very unsatisfying by the end of it, where it is like, you know, this entity has destroyed the planet. You know, it's killed most people on the planet and turned other people like Sebastian. And for him just to see another young girl in trouble and be like, yeah, I'm out. Like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm like, it just didn't really make sense to me. Like, you know, why now? Like, he's killed other children or, you know, dragged them out. Like, you know, he's done these horrific, unforgivable things, but suddenly now he's like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, it just didn't feel earned, his, you know, his switch. And when it happened, you know, we start to see the conflict like a bit earlier on, but at that point I'm like, I really am just not on board with him and that change, and the movie lost like almost all interest for me, because then I was like, at this point, I don't enjoy the cult he's getting away from, and I don't enjoy that he's just had this change. I wish he had stayed more fucked up, or had more of a reason, you know, more of a, you know, this journey as to why, not just like, oh yeah, that young girl reminds me of my daughter, and because I put that necklace on her, I'm even more so. It just felt so easy to get around it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I don't think his redemption arc is earned. I didn't want that to be the direction that they took Sebastian in anyway. But if you're going to do that and go a more generic route, there needs to be seeds that you've laid in all of these plethora of flashbacks. And like I say, other than this very, just such a basic link, like I say, of just, oh yeah, it just reminds me of my daughter, so now I'm going to suddenly not be beholden to the entity. And so at that point, when he's kind of figured shit out, it's like he's Superman, because he's seen the light and survived. And yeah, he's done some really
fucked up shit in the past. Chill now.
Yeah, like, even though he's done fucked up shit in the past, like, it's over now. Like, you've won. You saw the light. You've gone through it until the end. And so it's weird, because it almost makes the entity just less strong as well. If someone can just kind of change on a dime the way Sebastian does, like, there needed to be a big pivotal character reveal there. And it's a shame, because I think Bird Box is unique. Like, it's not just a monster. And again, it'd be so easy for it to just be, oh yeah, it's a monster, and if you see it, you die. I love that there's nuance here and different character stuff. And I think the setup of seers and making other people do fucked up shit, like, that's so cool, because typically what you'd have would either be monsters, or it would then be raiders. You know, that's what it always goes to. You know, it's the people that just want to fucking ruin the world anyway, because it's already gone to shit. And so I love that there's actually people like Sebastian that would want to do good, but then got corrupted, so you can't even trust the good people. And I think that's what this film should have been about, but it's not. Like, we're unfortunately talking about premise and hope more than like what the movie actually delivered by the end of it.
And I think even the entity as well, like, you know, in the finale when she's climbing this big tower, and she suddenly kind of goes like, oh, it's a bit dodgy me actually doing this blind, so I'm going to take my blindfold off. So she just kind of whips the blindfold off, walks around for a good like 5 minutes, and then the entity eventually, and it's weird because, like, you know, it's unclear whether it, you know, it feels like this entity is like a creature, or, you know, it's a tangible thing that has to get from point A to point B. It's not just that daylight is now what it is. You know, it has to, you know, similar to Quiet Place, when you make a noise, you're not just automatically pounced upon. The creatures then hear you and come, and if they're close, they come quicker, and otherwise you could set off a gunshot and the creature doesn't come because there's none near you, you know. And it feels like that a bit with this, but it just felt so weird because it was like so much shit was going on, and then she just like, well, I'm up high, like, I can probably have the blindfold off for a bit, and kind of puts it off for a bit, and then kind of in, you know, with a lot of throughout the whole movie, the second shit starts to levitate, it feels like the entity's there and you get screwed. Shit started to levitate and she's like, oh, put the old blindfold back on, and then she was like, good. And it just, yeah, it just felt like a very convenient, like, breakaway from the rules that we've had for the two movies that we've seen.
Yeah, like, you've definitely just remembered, like, the worst part of this film, because that annoyed the hell out of me. It was so dumb. What I'll say initially to defend it, and then I'll double down on hating it, is that what I agree, I think what they have established is that you kind of, everything's zero gravity, everything starts to float, you kind of hear, like, whispers, and then it arrives. So you do have that buffer of time. What I would say as a defense for the characters is that they don't know that. So obviously, she probably just went, fuck it, because she needed to see for whatever reason to get up some stairs, even though, like, they've done way more complicated shit than that in the rest of the film.
And then they were three quarters up by then.
Yeah, like, it was really not difficult just to follow, there's even a nice little handrail. So there wasn't a reason for it anyway, but I think she just went, screw it, and just got lucky. So that's what I'll say to defend it, but then to double down on it, like, as a viewer, that was super annoying, because you're just saying, like, oh, well, characters now can take off their blindfolds and can just avoid the entity. And then the fact that she put it back on to then do this, like, miraculous jump, again, there might almost be a storyline reason there, and you could just say she got lucky because she doesn't fully understand the rules of what's in play. But as a viewer watching it, it sucked. I hated everything about that. Like, it was so annoying, and it, like I say, belittled everything. And to do that in the finale as well, it was just annoying.
I think that's it, because that was annoying. Sebastian having his boss battle with the cult leader just was, you know, with this flame and them, like, stabbing each other and just, like, unnecessarily doing that. It just, yeah, all of that felt really unsatisfying as well. So the whole conclusion for me was, you know, fairly unsatisfying. I think the more I talk about it, the more I stew on this movie.
Yeah, I'm just going to stop, because I know you're just going to want to keep talking shit about it. So as far as recommendations go, why don't you go first?
Nah. Like, if you've not seen Bird Box, watch the first one. Like, I think, like, I still have hopes for the franchise, and I really do like the idea of this foreign movie, this very different take on a sequel, not just doing Bird Box 2 in America. Like, I really tip my hat to that, but the movie itself, I did not enjoy.
Yeah, this is really frustrating for me in terms of the, you know, deciding on a recommendation, because there is stuff in this film that I'm gonna remember at the end of the year. Like, it's, you know, in a very quiet year, there's stuff in here that is that memorable, but the sum of its parts just isn't. And I think, yeah, I love the premise, I love that they're still making this, and I also think being on Netflix changes everything, because if this is at a cinema, if this is a pay to watch, or even on a more niche stream service, but it being on the most popular streaming service in the world does change recommendations. It more just equates to, like, time then. And yeah, I'm really torn. Like, I by the end of this, I didn't hate it, but I was just frustrated with enough things that, oh man, Bird Box, man, like, this just, I wish I'd have stopped watching now after, like, 20 minutes, and that was just my memory, because, like, I loved it so much, and it didn't drop off that much, it just got a bit boring, and then just kind of got formulaic, so it's difficult. Like, I really don't know. I think if you even liked the first movie just a little bit, I think definitely watch this would be my recommendation. Yeah, but obviously, and know that it's obviously subtitled, so if that's not your thing, or obviously you can go dubbed, but it's difficult, because, yeah, like I say, I think this fits the mold of how I would describe most of the films we've seen this year, in that they have some really strong, I think, parts of Knock at the Cabin, I think parts of Evil Dead Rise, but these are movies that, by the end of it, disappointed me personally, that I'm sure other people loved, and I think this is another one of those that, like, man, Sebastian's heel turn, and him driving that bus away, and my shock when I couldn't believe it, is one of my favorite things I've seen in a film this year. But that's the first 20 minutes of a 2-hour film, and that just can't cut it, unfortunately. So that's our discussion on Bird Box Barcelona. We take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, that is pretty much it for another week. I mean, we mentioned it, well, at the start of the show and the news all in some capacity. But yeah, I feel like even though it's not horror, I feel like I need to just briefly mention the movie that we saw at the weekend. Because yeah, we saw Mission Impossible on the big screen, and I'll be honest, that might have been something that took away from this week's film, because I haven't been able to think about anything else since watching it.
Yeah,
I'm still on a high. Like, I might have to go watch it again, because it's just unbelievable. I think we go to the film, like, go to the cinema a lot. You know, way more than the average person. I think in general, my average is about 40 a year. And so it feeling special isn't a thing. I love going to the cinema. It's my preferred way to watch films, mm-hmm. but it doesn't feel special to me because I do it most weeks.
Yeah.
But seeing this film felt so special in an event way that I can't remember the last time I felt that way at the cinema. It might have been when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood happened. Like, I really would have to think back the last few years, because this was like, you knew you were watching something that doesn't happen almost in a generation. You know, it's a franchise that I've loved for pretty much my whole life, since seeing the first one. Two was when I really fell in love with it, and then three was the first one I got to see at the cinema. But, like, I love this franchise so much, and to see how far they've grown to get to this film, which I think is, it's probably the best one, pound for pound, because they nail the action sequences, of course, so much. But I think they've really cut out the fat now, what we just discussed, of, like, the kind of spy espionage shit would get a bit too much, and they'd be a bit kind of boring in some of the films, of, like, oh, yeah, there's 30 different double crosses. But my God, did they strip it back in this movie. They had such a simple villain and premise, and I think it worked wonderfully, because it just let the characters be them. And like obviously the small elements of kind of comedy and drama always work, but I was just in awe of seeing stuff on the big screen. Like, I don't know about you, but I was like, I felt privileged to watch this in a way where I was like, oh yeah, stuff like this isn't the norm. There's thousands of exceptionally talented people that are making this a reality, and I'm just happy it exists. And like, I really cannot wait. You know, we're probably only going to get one more of these, it seems like, ever. And I just want to savor it as much as possible. Like, I'm not ready to move on, where I just want to go watch it again. Like, it's so phenomenal.
I'm almost happy and sad that this movie exists, because it does ruin action movies for me.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, when people like John Wick that came out, and like, I'm not up for like these sorts of movies anymore, because Mission Impossible and like James Bond, I'm like, I just don't, you know, they're not landing anymore, because I just think Mission Impossible have just brought it to a different level, like the last few movies. And like, this one is the combination where it is just, that there's no fat on it, you know, it's just so lean, it's a long movie, and it's just got so much action. And to the point that even the scenes that are conversational have got such high stakes and tension involved that you're never like, I was always like on the edge of my seat for the whole movie. I think, you know, it really is the gold standard for me, I think, this franchise now, of like what action movies are. And like I say, to the point that it's almost to the detriment for the genre, because every other movie doesn't compare. And that's my negative towards the movie, that it's too good. And yeah, I just think it was a whole nother level, I'm the same as you. I really want to watch it again, and just I think you know, you're right, we do go to the cinema all the time, but like, we do cherry pick when we go see IMAX, and I think that's why we do that, because then it still gives us these moments, and I think it is important to do it infrequently. Like, saying that, there's probably a movie in the next week that we might do the same for, but you know, so be it. But I think it is, you know, I think that does give us that premium cinema experience, as opposed to like going to see whatever movie in you know, a smaller screen. But yeah, like, it's such a great franchise and such a great entry, this movie.
It's great that I can still get that feeling, because I kind of felt like it wouldn't, because we get less of the auteurs. Like, I feel like Tarantino and Nolan are kind of the only two big ones that kind of make these big spectacle movies nowadays. And I think superhero movies used to feel that way, but they clearly don't anymore because there's so many of them. You know, it's impossible. Like, stuff like The Batman and stuff, I would get so excited for, but it's just not. It just feels like another film these days. And so I think that's why Mission Impossible has this own, you know, as a personal place, because I've always loved it. But, like, they've really gone above and beyond with these films. And I'm really happy for Tom, because I've always been such a huge fan of him through kind of thick and thin, and through some cringy behavior and through some questionable behavior. I've always stuck by him as a fan. And I think what he's done with this franchise in particular is one of a kind. Like, yeah. I don't think there's another actor ever that's done the amount of shit that he's done on camera. I think it's truly unprecedented. I don't think we'll ever see it again either. I don't think he'll ever be an A-list actor that does the shit he does. I think it's truly remarkable.
They shouldn't, as a rule. You know, they shouldn't. Yeah. And that's the thing, because I think with this movie, that the set piece that he filmed, like, probably, you know, it wasn't the most visually impressive part of the movie, and not the most, like, nervous I felt, you know, throughout the whole movie, because it almost was unnecessarily dangerous. You know, when he's done other stuff, you know, when he was hanging on the side of the plane and the plane took off, and it was like, okay, that makes sense for the movie. It looks batshit crazy, and I cannot believe Tom Cruise did that. Whereas this was like, you've just made a parachute jump way more dangerous for for no reason, because you could have filmed it in a safer way and it would have looked comparable. Like, yeah, I tip my fucking hat to him and he's a legend, but I'm like, mate, it just felt so unnecessary, I think, is where I landed with it.
Yeah, he's got into the minutiae.
Dislike it.
Yeah, where it's like, it's hard to get across to a general film-going audience just how dangerous that is. And it's more for, like, the actual people that do that shit for a living, where they're like, oh, he took the hardest type of that, you know, specific jump. Like, it's, he is just crazy. And like I say, I miss event cinema. I, you know, you want more of it, but that's the entire point of it, is that you don't get it. You know, it wouldn't feel this way if we got one of these every month, which is impossible anyway. And so, yeah, it brings me to what you said, really, of like, it is wild to think, because I think the only other person, or two other people on this planet that could get that feeling is Christopher Nolan. And, you know, his huge, insane, it's got $100 million budget, Oppenheimer.
Mental.
I've seen like almost nothing of this film, so I cannot wait for it.
I saw like the original teaser, and that's it.
I did as well, like a year ago. So yeah, I've not really seen any of the actors in it or anything. I think I've seen like a screenshot of obviously Killian. But yeah, I cannot wait for this movie. But I was joking at the start of the podcast was this movie is rated R, and it's described as a thriller on Wikipedia. So
go on.
I feel like a rated R thriller. I think we should probably cover that for the show, shouldn't we? Like, also, like, this bit less jokingly.
We still recorded.
yeah, we still recorded. For what I know from like the actual story, it's one of the most horrific things ever. So like, it really, you know, it is like, to me, it's a very horror related story. But yeah, I'm half joking, but we're going to watch it anyway. I also feel like for our own sanity, we probably shouldn't watch a 3-hour movie and then be like, oh yeah, should we also watch Bo is Afraid for the podcast? Not three
like,
hours.
I vote, like, you know, just.
Yeah, 6 hours of films.
Yeah. You know, we're not doing Fright Fest this year. We might as well kill ourselves watching unnecessarily long movies just for banter.
Exactly. But yeah, no, it's a great time. Like, there's so much shit. It's actually, like, it's reframed the way I see the year quite differently when you see a movie like Mission Impossible, which, by the way, is easily my number one movie of the year. Like, it's not even close. Just like, obviously, we were just talking about it so positively, but that's the clarifier. Like, it's not even close. It's not comparable to anything I've seen on the big screen this year. But yeah, hopefully Oppenheimer is, and hopefully there's a few others. Like, there's big budget sci-fi is kind of how we're rounding out the year, with like Dune Part 2 and The Creator, which looks fantastic.
Great.
Yeah, so like, we're getting sci-fi, we're not getting horror, unfortunately.
Do one, but yeah, great. And Oppenheimer.
Yeah,
the second I see the Dune trailer, I'm already confused again. I'm like, I don't know whether I can be another 3 hours in that world confused.
No, like, I think you need to just have a drink and just chill, because like, it's you don't watch Dune for the plot, let me tell you. Like, it's for those unbelievable. It's for those unbelievable visuals. But yeah, we'll talk about those in the future. This is a, I don't even know what this episode is anymore. This is like a, this is a podcast, I guess.
No, I don't know. You know, I think we jumped the shark long ago.
I was going to say, I like it. I think this is us restructuring the podcast of like, we, it's so funny because we have these moments every few years when we get fucked off with horror and we're like, we're just going to cover stuff that we want to cover. And then we just always go back on it. And then we're like, so let's find some random on demand movie.
Well, because then I keep like just giving you avenues to watch Terminator 2 and you're like, we're not fucking doing it. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess we'll watch a shitty horror then.
That's it. I saw Terminator 2 showing in the cinemas again in August, so...
Yeah. I mean, if we see Terminator 2 in the cinema, that is a show for the week.
Like, we already have.
Yeah, but we didn't do an actual numbered episode on it. Like, you know, basically, the day that the Terminator 2 gets a numbered episode, that's the final episode of the podcast. I've achieved what I needed to achieve.
That's fair. At some point, we should just record that, so we just got it in the can, just in case.
Yeah, know? I want to be like J.K. Rowling. Like, yeah, I want to have like the final chapter made. Like, okay, yeah, the Terminator 2 episode has been recorded. Like, you know, we can press the button one day.
Yeah, it's the kill switch. Like, I'll have it ready, and I'll just have it in the you know, in the media library. But yeah. I just won't have it published until we're ready to say goodbye.
Yeah, we probably ought to record that pretty soon, bro.
Yeah, before Oppenheimer kills us, probably. What a mad show this was. But yeah, that was episode 356. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. And how could I start that?